Hello and welcome to Generation Squeeze's Hard Truths podcast. My name is Umair. I am the Knowledge to Action Lead with Gen Squeeze. I'm joined by my colleague, Paul Kershaw, Gen Squeeze's founder and a policy professor at UBC. And we're recording this one in person.
Woohoo!
Yeah. This is Paul's last day in Ottawa, so we thought we'd have another sit-down conversation.
Last day for this trip.
For this trip. He'll be back.
And we'll come back.
And he's had a busy week here. He's hosted a breakfast for parliamentary staffers. He delivered a press briefing on the Get Well Canada initiative from the National Press Theatre. And he's had a number of meetings with government officials. So we thought we'd chat a bit about Paul's activities. I actually don't know the range of all of them. And so what he's been up to, why, you know, whether there are any insights that he's gained, and the potential impact that this work has. So where should we begin?
Well, I guess let's begin with why we're here this week. And you know, how we're trying to use our time here and all the work that goes into setting that up, you know, in weeks and weeks before, months before, really. So the why is, as we chat a lot about in this podcast, we're getting close to budget season for the federal government and the provinces. And in some regards, this trip is the last of a series of efforts to try and get some Gen Squeeze priorities featured in the 2023 budget. And we do that not simply by trying to take a bunch of meetings with ministries that feed information into finance, but we start by trying to show that, you know, we can influence public dialogue and that we have a constituency that cares about these things. And so, you know, as a reminder, we often talk about, you know, why it matters to us that we have, you know, tens of thousands of Canadians following, because that's one of the key things that helps to get us access to leaders in finance, leaders in treasury, leaders in the Ministry for Labor, leaders in the Ministry for Health, leaders in the Ministry for Small Business and Economic Development, families, youth and children, social development. We've had meetings with all of those ministries this week. But to get them, you know, I can't just show up as one professor. They're not going to care about that evidence. But they do care about our constituency, the constituency that cares about generational fairness and as the underlying disease for housing and affordability, family and affordability, climate change, government debt. And so that's one part of the strategy, and our listeners contribute to that. So way to go, listeners, building the constituency. And simultaneously, you know, we work hard to show we can influence public debate. And so some of our listeners might know that I've been writing more and more in the Globe and Mail and getting you know, op-eds in the Toronto Star. And we intentionally timed that, you know, to go hand in hand with these meetings so that we can send to the minister responsible for childcare, here, we're framing debate on these issues. Send to the minister responsible for healthcare, hey, see, we're framing debate on these issues. And on the Sunday before I arrived, or the Saturday before I arrived here this week, we had another piece in the Globe specifically about the importance of budgeting for generational fairness. So those are the things that we do in advance to try and gain access. And then the access is an important opportunity for us to bring the recommendations we have at Gen Squeeze on our website directly to decision makers. And that matters in both a important way and in a humbling and humiliating way. And the humiliating way is, we've been doing this for a while, and we, you know, we can shape media debate and we've been having meetings, but each time we come, it's clear that not as many people know about our recommendations, not as many people know about the work as we would really like to do. So it's this, and that's not a critique necessarily of these hardworking bureaucrats and political leaders. I mean, they get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things across their desk on a daily basis, and all of them have, you know, reason to be capturing their attention. And so there's a competition, and we're in that space, and we do reasonably well for, you know, a small but mighty group. But it's hard to break through. I'm pleased about this trip, but there's constantly more work to try to do to signal that our priorities are priorities that really need top of mind attention from many ministries.
So I'm wondering if maybe we can pick one of your meetings and you could tell us how it went.
I'll start with the Ministry of Labor, where we, that was the first meeting this week, actually. And the Ministry of Labor's chief of staff came to connect with me, brought one of his policy advisor colleagues. And that was actually a really rewarding meeting on a range of fronts, because in many respects, that relationship was initiated by this chief of staff. Reading our work in the Globe and then online, and reaching out and said, can we discuss further how this important work on intergenerational fairness relates to the work of my minister and the mandate letter? And that's a very different dynamic than having, our hustling as, can we have time? When a chief of staff or a minister is reaching out, interested in how our work relates to that mandate letter, that person's suddenly becoming more of a champion for us. And so I'm really appreciative of that particular chief of staff, who in turn then facilitated interaction with multiple other chiefs of staff at ministries. And so what did that meeting look like? Well, we got together and I hustle out my computer. I have pages of different budget pages, where I'm saying, did you know? Did you know this information? How for the Ministry of Labor, are you aware that increase in spending on old age security, something that's so important, but the increase is going to be bigger than the entire employment insurance budget? And interestingly, my sense was the chief of staff wasn't aware of that, because these details get buried at the backs of budgets and they don't receive a lot of attention amongst ministers and their most important advisors, because other elements, other shorter term, newer novel things are getting focused on in more detail. And so when he saw that, he's like, okay, actually this is important. And then we go to a Jen Squeeze report and said, like, have you been seeing what's been driving GDP? And what's been driving GDP doesn't always drive employment and labor. He's like, oh, you've got to show this to my minister. So he's going to set that up, I hope, in the not so distant future. So it kind of happens like that. And what's interesting about this work is it's so much about relationships. And, you know, people who are listening will know that in all of their lives, in their personal lives, in their work lives, that relationships are often what will be the conduit by which, you know, ideas spread and diffuse and doors will be opened or closed. And so I'm really appreciative of that meeting. It set up then meetings with the minister responsible for children, families, and social development, with Treasury. It set up meetings with the chief of staff for the Minister of Health, which was really useful as we were launching Get Well Canada, and in that case, making an offer. How can we help the Health Canada Ministry walk this tightrope between investing more to address the challenges in our medical system and at the same time resist the call for constant more money on that space and risk crowding out investment in the childcare, the housing, the poverty reduction, the reconciliation that makes us well? That's a couple of examples.
How long are these meetings?
They would tend to be about 45 minutes. The first one with the chief of staff and labor was actually more like a lunchtime. So that was more like an hour and 15, probably, something like that. But they tend to be about 45 minutes. And especially when we've asked for the meeting and getting access. I mean, one of the things I always have to remind myself is, you know, we work with a group of colleagues at Impact Public Affairs who help people build their strategy about liaising with government officials. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, got access. And they're like, Paul, you should know, like, many groups would be clamoring to get this same degree of access. Like, how are you pulling that off? And so that reminds me, you know, that we can be proud of Gen Squeeze. And I think that there's this moment in each meeting we go in, computer opens up, and I got 5 minutes to attract the attention and be useful. And I think that that's really Gen Squeeze's, one of Gen Squeeze's key value propositions is, you know, for our listeners here, we aim to be useful, but like, okay, we're going to be a voice representing concerns that you have. So that's a usefulness we're trying to offer. We're simultaneously like, we're going to defend you and show often that you like the younger demographic. Are we doing something wrong when it's, you know, hard to make our income stretch to cover our cost of living? Like, no, we're going to be a myth buster for you. Don't buy that. There's something bigger going on. So I think that's another way we're useful. But for government, we have to be useful in two ways. Do we have good ideas about what's going on in the economy right now and ways to potentially adapt? And can we be useful to actually help them achieve that in the world of politics? When can we provide political cover? So I go into each of these meetings and try and offer, like, Gen Squeeze can provide political cover. Here's some ways to do that. And we're also going to prod, like, we need government legislation or government budgeting or simply government reporting to be better in these ways. So take the meeting I had with policy advisors to Chrystia Freeland, the Minister of Finance, and our Deputy Prime Minister. That meeting started with my acknowledging once again that we are so delighted that the Deputy Prime Minister has embraced the language that housing is an intergenerational injustice. So I offer, like, how can we celebrate that? How can we get her more credit for doing that so that she can then do more of it, including using that kind of phrasing, that framing, which is so important for shaping not only public opinion, but the attitudes of our politicians? How can we get them to do more of that? So it's an offer. We want to give you cover, and then we're going to ask you to do, you know, keep going in this direction. So that's a kind of offer. And then at other times, listeners may know that we're interested, for instance, in something quite wonky, like we want Statistics Canada to be improving the way that it measures housing inflation. So we've been meeting with Minister Champagne's office. He's the minister responsible for Stats Can, working on that. But we go to finance and say, hey, can you find language in the budget in tasking Stats Can to review the way it measures housing inflation? Because if it gets in the budget, that will be the political signal to which Stats Can will ultimately respond. And so I'll be looking carefully for that. I'm hopeful for that. Will it be this year? Maybe. If not this year, darn it, it'll be next year. It has to be. But those are the kinds of, you know, offer them something to be helpful, you know, offer them something helpful in the world of politics, and then try to offer good ideas. This mattered actually when speaking with the chief of staff for the Minister of Health. He's like, you know, the reason that the federal government was actually able to stand relatively firm in resisting the very large calls specifically for medical care by premiers, as opposed to more investing where health begins, reflected kind of the what they would call third-party validation. And so groups like Get Well Canada and other third-party validators saying, no, this is the right way to go, really matters.
So I just want to highlight, like, 45 minutes is a lot. In my own experience, like, trying to meet with, you know, officials in municipal government or Queen's Park, if you get 20 minutes, that's good.
Yeah, okay, that's a nice helpful reminder too. I think one of the unique parts about what Gen Squeeze does is we're not your typical quote-unquote advocacy group. We're like this think and change tank, and the think part with its credentials and its roots in the academy, where we can slice and dice data better than most groups on the issues that we work on. That actually gives us a leg up in earning more time in these meetings, because we're able to offer information and analysis that that these leaders are not often getting elsewhere. And that's a help.
I don't know if you want to talk about, maybe you don't have to get into the specifics of it, but were there meetings that didn't go the way that you thought they might?
Yeah, and I'm trying to be quite careful. Like, I'm not naming people's names. I'm not, like, you know, these meetings are happening behind closed doors. They're not public meetings and whatnot. And that allows a little more frank and confidence, you know, to happen, or, you know, confidentiality to happen there. So I hope I'm striking the right balance and giving enough detail, but also, you know, respecting the people who took the meetings. You know, there are some people in finance, is such this, it's this sort of central organization in a government, and everybody, not just stakeholders, but every ministry and department's competing for their time and attention, and those departments have asks. I think the policy advisors I meet with there are especially good at keeping their cards close to their chest. And I, in most meetings, I'm looking, you can tell, I'm kind of like an energy guy in meetings. I probably overly energetic in the podcast sometimes. But I'm looking for a little bit of, like, where's the body language coming out? Like, what's resonating? Darn, those people in finance are just good at, like, moderating. I can't always quite tell. I can tell when they're writing things down. So I'm taking that these days. Like, which things are you writing down? Which are you not? So I'd always love to knock it out of the park in finance more. Those are especially challenging meetings. I think one of the things I'm pleased about this meeting, you know, is we're getting better at doing these kinds of things. Because we're here for the week, and we had this really great meeting initially with the Ministry of Labor. So then I asked that, can you contact these ministers and, you know, recommend that we meet? But then after I had other meetings later in the week, I said, could you go back and be in touch with these people I've already met with, and said, oh, you find that interesting too? So that we're actually creating a bit of a circle of dialogue and triangulation. And in finance, for instance, one of the no-cost things we want to happen in the next budget is to have for the budget is to be honest with Canadians and our parliamentarians about how spending's growing for an older demographic we love, but much, much faster than what's growing for their kids and grandchildren. We just want that to be honest. Some people might think that's great. Some people might question whether it's the right balance. But if we don't have it foregrounded for all of us to see, it will never foster that dialogue. So after meeting the political side of finance, the next day I went and met with senior bureaucrats in finance and said, okay, this is my ask and here's how this can be delivered. And happily the bureaucratic side, like they're positioned to be able to do it. And so I said, well, I'll put you in touch and hope that even though I'm no longer going to be part of that, you'll talk further about not only the political interest in it, but in its execution. So GenSqueeze is trying to be that facilitator right now of conversations that aren't getting necessarily jump-started within government, conversations we think are important, and then trying to be that enzyme bringing them together.
One thing we haven't talked about is housing, and I think that's something that our listeners are probably especially interested in. So how did that meeting go?
Yeah, so housing actually is brought up in every meeting. So Canada does have a minister responsible specifically for housing. Yesterday evening, I was meeting with two VPs at the Canadian Housing and Mortgage Company, which is responsible for Canada's national housing strategy. So obviously there, you know, all the dialogues about housing. But it's important to go and get the Minister for Labor concerned about housing, because what's creaming workers is not that wages are, you know, really plummeting or, you know, they are increasing somewhat. It's that their wages can't keep pace with the cost of housing. And similarly, you know, we go and we talk with the those responsible for childcare. We're like, why do we need to have $10 a day childcare be the max fee, not the average fee? Because we've still lost control of housing prices, and that's been harder for governments to fix. So make sure that younger families aren't facing high childcare costs. Don't let this thing $10 be the average, make it the max. And then you can see in health. So we have to recognize that if we really want to slow the flow of sickness into our hospitals, then we have to address housing affordability, because that's the biggest source of stress in so many people's lives. And it often then results in some people being insecure in their housing. And that's the moment where we're going to just augment and amplify at exponential levels the physical and mental ill health that they're going to struggle with. So we bring housing at GenSqueeze into literally every single meeting. We'll remind them about our straddling the gap charts that some of our listeners likely know about, showing the high rising home prices, the earnings that have been flattened down. And I guess that's a moment where I'm like, darn it, Paul. We've been doing those, when I was going to say stupid, they're not stupid. We've been doing these great, really straightforward graphs for years now, but even still, not enough people know about them. And so you have to do this work and bring the housing theme to all parts of government, because it's just that critical.
So maybe shifting now from these meetings to some of the more public.
Yeah, the breakfast maybe.
Yeah. So let's talk about that.
So we hosted on the Hill a breakfast. And, you know, this is one tactic that many, a stakeholder group, a lobby group, an advocacy group will do. In fact, on that day, the Federation of Canadian Municipalities was having a breakfast at the same time, and they're bigger, so they definitely can outcompete us on those things, and understandably so. We had a breakfast because if we were to do it in the evening times, you'll often have, I heard recently, maybe just this week or last, that the Brewers Association was having an evening event, and then the Gaming Association was having an evening event. Like, you know, GenSqueeze is not going to outcompete those themes for the interest of staffers at the end of the day. So we're going to go earlier. And the thinking is at least twofold. First, are we the kind of groups that organized enough to be able to come and host events and welcome people out? Because remember, politics responds to those organized and show up. Two, we want, people will know we have this pledge that we want our politicians to take. Be a generational fairness champion. Indeed, I should have said, why am I here this week? Because ultimately we're trying to advance that work of politicians knowing about the importance of being generational fairness champions. And so we bring that theme into all of our meetings that I've earlier referenced. But on this breakfast on Thursday morning, just yesterday morning, she organized with our colleagues at Impact Public Affairs, and the mayor and I and Andrea and others have been working hard to pull it off. We invited staffers in MP's office, and staffers tend to be young. They're often, you know, you saw the group yesterday, and they're probably often in their mid to late 20s, early 30s, gets to be a senior policy advisor a lot of the time these days. And we know from GenSqueeze that that's a demographic disproportionately feeling the hurt and harm of getting good education, landing, in this case, jobs that pay reasonably well, they're working for the federal government, and struggling to pay for housing, and worried about climate change. And so we brought them into the room to remind them that being in favor of generational fairness is akin to being in favor of ending sexism or racism or classism or colonialism or heterosexism. And that those are all things that our parliamentarians are opposed to as a shared purpose, regardless of their party differences about policy. And so we said, now we need to add opposition to a dysfunctional generational system into that thing for which we have shared purpose amongst our politicians, into that list. And so what did we have? About, I don't know, 40-ish? I didn't count.
The room was full.
Yeah. So actually, with the room is full, it's probably more than 40 then, because there are quite a lot of tables. And so probably four or five people at each table. And, you know, it's an interesting kind of thing where the first 40-ish minutes, people were milling about, getting breakfast. There were individual conversations. You were chatting with people at some tables. I'm typically hustling around all the tables to meet people. And then we shared for 10 minutes some observations about why it's important for generational fairness champions to care about investing fairly for young and old alike, treating housing as homes first, investment second, investing in health promotion even more urgently than treating illness, making sure we don't grow government debts on young people outside of recessions, and leaving the planet least as well as we found it. And I thought, and then we opened it up to questions. And well, what did you think about the question period? You were there.
Yeah. So, well, one of the things that became clear during the question period was that it wasn't just staffers who were there.
Yes.
We had lots of staffers, but we also had people from the civil service, and we had at least a couple of MPs who came as well.
Indeed. So you're thinking about one MP asked a particularly provocative question.
Well, before that, maybe I want to just highlight the civil servant, because he began his question with, "This is a very powerful message."
Yes. Tell us more, Umer.
Well, no, I want to ask you how that, how you felt after that. Because, this is a message that you've been kind of honing and delivering for a long time. And you come to Ottawa and this is, maybe the second question that someone asks you and this is how they pose it.
Yes. Yeah, so you might. So I either think that is an incredible success and an incredible failure simultaneously. It's like, yeah, it is a really powerful framework. And so that's exciting. I think that reflects why can we get 45-minute meetings? Because they actually booked it for 15 and they're like, oh, this is important. So they're stretching it. And so they get that, oh, this is important. So that's exciting. And then the frustration sets in. And I guess, I will share on the podcast, like a bit of a personal failure. Like, it's important. Why haven't we been successful enough to scale it up so that it's just commonly recognized? And I think that just reflects how darn difficult systems change is, because, that member of the public service is excited at that moment and they might even bring that excitement back into their office that day. They might tell a few other people, but its ability to shape what they're going to then next do will get constrained by all the other momentum that that office place already has. And that office place doesn't right now have a lot of momentum to actually engage with the generational lens. And let me make that explicit. So I'll go and speak about another, an ADM, an associate deputy minister. That's a relatively high-level civil servant who, for years, we've been talking about how their approach to budgeting hides this generational tension between how old age security is growing so much faster than anything else, and it's not getting a bullet point in the budget documents and media releases. And she'll say, well, that's because that's not what we do. That's not how we slice and dice the numbers. That's not how we have been doing it. And so because we haven't been doing it that way, it's difficult to change. And so I'm so excited by that framing of the civil servant's question.
Okay, so let's come back to the MP that was there, one of the MPs who was there from Kitchener-Waterloo, which is my home turf.
Oh, of course, yes.
But he, he was supportive. He began with that, but then he raised a challenge that we often get, that maybe some of our framing is bringing the different generations into conflict.
Yes, yes. Well, first off, let's be clear, he absolutely was supportive, because just being at the breakfast, it's not like we had hundreds and hundreds of MPs at the breakfast, in part because we weren't inviting MPs, but, kudos in particular, MP Elizabeth May is the MP who sponsored the event for us. That's really, we need an MP sponsor just to be able to do this kind of thing on the Hill, and well, we know from our some previous episodes of the podcast, MP May has been a strong voice for generational fairness throughout her career. And I like collaborating with MP May because, you know, Jen Squeeze really tries to hold on to nonpartisan political optics. And so the Green Party, you know, not even an official party sometimes, partnering with them, I think, is a safe way to not, you know, to be showing that we, you know, we're really wanting to speak to all parties and not aligning ourselves in particular with one. So I really appreciate MP May facilitating that. And then, of course, her Green MP colleague was one of the MPs who showed up. And so that was very supportive and much appreciated. And then it is supportive as well when talented political leaders, thought leaders, ask hard questions. And so let's give I'm here more credit for that. And he asked, well, are you pitting older Canadians against younger Canadians? This happens every time I mention old age security. I can't mention its growth and compare it to anything else without someone implying that Gen Squeeze is pitting generations against one another. I hope that I remain stoic when engaging with that, because I can find that a little bit triggering now, I'll confess, after this many years, because our point is not that Generation Squeeze is pitting generations against one another. Our point is that there's a risk that our budgets are pitting generations against one another. We don't have that conversation, and so we can't be confident that we're actually working fairly for young and old alike. That's the vision at Gen Squeeze. Indeed, if you come to our website, we're working for well-being for all generations. We want this country to work for all generations, but we can't just presume it currently is. And so I shared that. Also, though, the MP's question did imply a little bit of a misunderstanding about old age security. There's two components to it. And this MP was rightly very focused on protecting what we called the Guaranteed Income Supplement, GIS. It's the one place in Canada where we have a guaranteed annual income available for anyone over the age of 65, with the caveat that they've needed to be in Canada long enough. And it's why that program is precisely why, or at least one of the dominant reasons why, retirees have the lowest rates of poverty of any age group in the country, because we actually do have this guaranteed income for them. So that's not something we would want to be really disrupting. But old age security is partly the guaranteed income supplement, and it's partly about retirement income more generally. And it's the broader part that is definitely driving its increasing value. So growing from $69 billion now to $97 billion a year in spending 5 years from now. As I've mentioned, that rate of growth in this budget line for old age security is bigger than the total amount we will have as the employment insurance system, the Canada Child Benefit, which is so important for income for families with kids, four times what we're investing in child. It's just massive. And that is a policy that stretches into providing income support into retirees, even who have six-figure incomes before the support from government. And so, you know, that's an interesting question. I'm open to asking the hard question. Here's the hard truth of the day. Is that the most efficient use of our tax dollars right now? Because it's not the case that this money that people draw on old age security is something they prepaid for. It's very different than their Canada Public Pension Plan. What people draw to their Canada Public Pension Plan, CPP, when they get it, is largely related to what they contributed over their working lives. The old age security system's like that, is not like that. It has a much looser relationship. Yes, people pay taxes during their lives, some of which went to pay the old age security of those who are already seniors. But now we have so many more seniors than we did back in the day. And so we didn't have today's seniors paying taxes at a level that was commensurate with the number of seniors we have now. And that's one of the tensions we don't talk enough about. But when we use all of our economy's growth to service that one line in the budget, growing so fast by comparison with anything else, we leave little left over to address the climate change concerns, childcare concerns, housing concerns that many younger people in particular face, and newcomers of any age.
So in wrapping up, is there any one particular insight that you're taking back with you as you set to leave Ottawa?
That a group like ours, where, you know, we talk about our theory of change is we're going to have good evidence that we want to influence policy, but we're to help the evidence, we're going to be framing people's opinions. framing beliefs about policy problems and especially solutions, and then we're going to have recommendations. But if we just stop there and think that getting it out kind of occasionally in the media is going to be enough or sharing it with our constituencies enough, that's not true. We need to be bringing it directly into the relationships, into the people who make our government, for its strengths and weaknesses, operate. And so I'm reminded and energized in the way that you were talking about earlier, Mayor. I'm energized by the power of meeting with people, often in person, but actually some meetings ironically had to happen over Zoom even though I was here. But meeting face-to-face, getting people's time, and then being effective at honing their attention for 45 minutes on this issue and then doing it over and over and over again in different parts. And if we can just cause that so we don't have one civil servant saying, this is a powerful frame, but we actually have dozens of people saying it simultaneously and then directing that to those designing the budget. We have to keep doing it. We have to do the budget work all year long and then have moments where we come and really focus on it to try and have this push to get the actual document to reflect improvement.